using Windows, so maybe you can show me how to open that.
So, which one? This one?
No, no.
Ah, sorry.
It slides. I kept the PDF. Thank you. So the title of my talk is Cooperative Maximum Likelihood Estimation for Fluid Flow Dynamics in a Biosensor Array. And maybe somewhat unlike the previous talks in this session, this is actually a real system we've built. So we're actually trying to see how we can model a fairly complicated system. So first I want to actually describe to you what this real system is, and it's kind of quite an interesting thing in its own right. So let's focus first on the diagram on the right-hand side of the slide. And what happened was that our colleague, whose name is Bruce Cornell, in the 1990s, and actually he's continued to work on that, he's built a remarkable nano machine which can actually be used as a biosensor. And the goal of our work is to try and model that. How does that work, and how can we use that to do useful things? So it's first important to kind of understand how this thing works, because then we can model the dynamics of that. So this biosensor is actually built out of a synthetic cell membrane. I mean, all of us know what a cell membrane is. It surrounds a cell, and it contains of two layers of fat, basically. It's called a lipid bilayer. Mathematically, the two layers of fat move around according to a random walk. That's typically what people do. So what they do next is they insert into this lipid bilayer protein nanotubes. These tubes are very easy to synthesize in a proteomics lab. So what you can imagine now is you have two layers moving around according to a random walk. When two tubes combine, they form a conducting pore and a current can go through. When two tubes do not combine, there is no current going through. Of course, there are several thousands of such tubes, and so the probability of a couple of tubes combining is quite large. And what you see is some sort of current which goes up and down. Okay, so that's really what's shown there. Now, that's fairly easy to synthesize. The main idea behind this, of course, is the next stage, where you attach to the top layer specific antibodies which can detect molecules you want to detect. So suppose you're interested in detecting HIV or H1N1 or explosive molecules. You can build in a proteomics lab specific antibodies which latch on to this target molecule. So what happens is when your target molecule comes, these antibodies covalently bond to them and they're stuck. So what happens is the top layer cannot move anymore. They're grabbed. So this changes the dynamics of the system. Previously, you had an unhindered random walk where things were moving around. You had on and off, basically, current. Now the top layer is stuck, and so the current dramatically decreases. Or in other words, the impedance increases substantially. So this was the biosensor they built. He published this paper in 1997 in Nature. And it's quite a remarkable sensor, because this can detect very low concentrations. It can detect up to femtomolar concentrations. And if you think about it, that's pretty surprising, because one molar, as you know from high school chemistry, is one Avogadro's number, roughly 10 to the 23 molecules in 1 liter of water. One femtomolar, multiply that by 10 to the minus 15, it's about 10 to the 8 molecules in a liter of water. And that is extremely low concentrations. And yet these things work remarkably well for that. Okay, so this is a system they built. Our goal has been to try to see how can we model the system, how can we predict how it performs. Because if we can do that, we can possibly refine the system and make it work better. And we can also maybe extend the system to work in other scenarios. So we've actually done a lot of work in this in the past, and we have a couple of papers which came out in the Translational Nanotechnology just last year, which dealt with modeling this specific system. What I want to talk about today is, which is ongoing work, is suppose now you take this biosensor and you build an array of such biosensors. How can you model that? And it turns out to be a highly non-trivial problem, and I'll tell you why now. Okay, so let's first start with the individual electrode. So this is a single biosensor. What happens is you have fluid which is delivered to this biosensor in a fluid delivery system. So you basically have some liquid, such as sodium chloride, containing the molecules you wish to detect. And that is flowing past this biosensor. So this equation is the partial differential equation of a fluid flow. It's a parabolic PDE with the diffusion constant and so on. Okay. Now what happens is when the molecules in the fluid encounter this electrode, they trigger off a chemical reaction, which is a bunch of nonlinear ordinary differential equations. So A here is the concentration of the stuff you want to estimate, such as the HIV or whatever. These are the chemical reactions that trigger off, and what you measure eventually is some noisy version of a specific chemical in this chemical reaction plus noise. So these are the dynamics of the system. They're pretty dirty for several reasons. You see, this guy in its own right is pretty nice. This is just a straightforward fluid flow PDE. There's no big deal. The bad part are these boundary conditions. You see, this electrode lies at the bottom of the fluid chamber, and this is where the stuff happens. This is where the molecules which you wish to detect react with this biosensor to give you your measurement, which is an increase in impedance. This is a boundary condition only in one location, so it's non-smooth. It's not above it, it's just at that location. Okay. So when you have these complicated derivatives in your boundary condition, these are called von Neumann boundary conditions, and they're fairly difficult to deal with. In addition, you have noise here. Okay, so this system is quite sophisticated. It turns out, actually, you can construct some very nice models for this, and we've done that in the past. Now let's look at what we're trying to do here. So now we have an array of such things. You see, what is really non-standard in this is when you have an array of such electrodes, and particularly if your concentration A is very small, when your fluid goes past the first electrode, the electrode grabs some of the molecules to react with. That means when you measure the system, you're actually changing the system. And that's slightly non-standard in signal processing. In most signal processing we do, typically when you measure the system, you don't change it. So as the fluid flows by here, the first electrode grabs the molecules. So the second electrode has fewer molecules to detect. So if you place the second electrode very close to the first electrode, there's a depletion layer and you're not going to measure anything. If you place the second electrode very far away from the first electrode, it takes a while for the fluid to reach there, and it means that your detection time is very, very long. So actually designing where you place your electrodes is in itself also an interesting problem. So anyway, our goal at this stage is, first of all, to be able to model this and come up with some tractable approximations as to how this thing works. And I want to describe some of those to you. So you can view this as a problem of saying that given this fairly complex system with multiple measuring devices, how do I estimate the concentration A, the initial concentration here? That's what we wish to estimate. Okay. So again, let's give a little bit of intuition before we start. So PDEs are dirty. I mean, so the first step you can think of is, can we construct some sort of timescale approximation to replace this by an ordinary differential equation? In that sense, we would simply have nonlinear ODEs, which is a more tractable problem. Then you can deal with a nonlinear regression and a signal processing, guys, that's a trivial problem. Okay. Not trivial, but at least it's manageable. Okay. So the way one can do it is you can use actually multi-timescale dynamics. It turns out that as this fluid goes by, you see stuff at the top of the chamber, which is very far away from the electrode, it very quickly achieves stationarity. In other words, stuff at the top, A of t reaches A infinity very quickly. So it turns out you can really segment spatially this into several compartments. Regions which are far away from the electrode are basically constant. You don't need this PDE. Then you just have this ODE. Regions which are very close, of course, you have this PDE, but you can make further approximations, as I will describe in a minute. So the idea is you're going to use something called averaging theory, which some of you may be familiar with when you deal with adaptive filters, that on a time scale where things happen slow and fast, on the slow time scale, you can replace the fast guy by its average, which in this case is a constant, away from the electrode. And when the stuff close to the electrode, you have to be a bit more careful to see what to be done. Okay, so that's roughly the intuition, and now let me go on to how you construct such models. So this is actually the model, as I mentioned before. You have this fluid flow, and then these are the equations of the chemical reactions of the sensors. It turns out, actually, these chemical reactions themselves have two timescales, and so you can further simplify these things. You can actually average out the fast timescale and deal with the slow timescales. And as I said, our goal is to estimate the concentration A in the inlet of this fluid chamber. So what we're going to do is we're going to replace this distributed parameter system, or a PDE, if you like, by multiple compartments. And that becomes a bunch of nonlinear ODEs, and then you can do a regression solution. So the way you do this, this idea of using multiple compartment models actually is widely studied by people who do dealing with fluid flow chemistry, and they analyze some fairly complex devices for that sort of thing. The main idea is this. So if you consider, say, a single electrode, what you can do is, and this is the intuition, you can actually make this quite rigorous mathematically. So if you look at your PDE, you can view heuristically a PDE over the spatial dimension as an infinite system of ODEs where you quantize your space. Okay, so you can think of a grid over space where on each grid you have an ODE, and of course all these ODEs are interacting. You have an infinite system of ODEs basically. What you can then show is that the ODE which is very close to here is really the boundary condition. So that's our chemical reaction here. The ODE which is away from this is essentially the one which is a boundary with this chamber here where things happen very fast. And there's no PDE. It's just a constant because it's attained its fluid flow approximation already. So essentially you have two boundary conditions and this chamber is just a bunch of nonlinear ODEs. That's really the idea. So what you've ended up with is a two-compartment model here where here you have a constant, here you have a nonlinear ODE, and you have the boundary condition which is another nonlinear ODE. So you're now down to a finite dimensional system, which is tractable. Now, as I said, this was a heuristic thing because to be really rigorous, you have to kind of quantize, of course, this about some step size epsilon, and then you have to prove that the errors are bounded in epsilon. This is a deterministic system, so it's not that difficult to do things. I mean, if it was stochastic, it would be slightly harder. So actually, it's not that difficult. If you assume certain regularity in the system, then you can do all this. Okay, now, so that's the two-compartment model, which is easy to do. Now you can imagine conceptually extending this to a multi-compartment model. And it's roughly the same thing. So in the first compartment is identical to what you had here for the first electrode. And when stuff goes past the first electrode to the second electrode, again you have a two-compartment model there. And of course, you have to keep in mind that because the first electrode has grabbed some of the analyte, some of the molecules you're trying to measure, the second electrode has different boundary conditions, which are vertical boundary conditions here. Okay. But it's quite easy to take care of conceptually. So there you have it. You basically have a whole system of nonlinear ODEs, which is conceptually at least easier than dealing with a much more complex system. So once you now, as I mentioned, and I'm not going to give you any of the details of these ODEs, it doesn't really serve any purpose, but just to kind of go back and tell you roughly what these ordinary differential equations do, you see, they really model the chemical reactions here. They model the movement of these nanotubes in the cell membrane. They model how these chemical reactions happen, the chemical bonds, and how when things couple, they don't move anymore. So really there are about seven chemical species in here which you model by an ordinary differential equation. These are quite tractable, and in fact, the reaction rate constants are known by biochemists, so all the parameters of those equations are actually known. Okay, so once you end up with this, as I said, you know all the reaction rate parameters. Your only unknown quantity is your input analyte concentration, which is what you wish to estimate. So that is really the main idea. And just to again give you now some intuition behind how this would work. So if you think about, even if this was now a bunch of ordinary differential equations, or if you like, discretized over time, it's a bunch of difference equations. You have this fluid flow coming in here. So assuming that this guy removed, say, some proportion of the molecules, say alpha, that means your signal power here is reduced by alpha because you've grabbed some of the guys. So you can think that the second electrode has a lower signal-to-noise ratio because you have less signal. Now, of course, the next electrode will be alpha squared and so on, so it becomes a geometric series. So it's obvious that you won't get dramatic improvement as you have multiple electrodes because it dies off as a geometric series. I mean, that's kind of obvious, even in the linear case. Now, of course, this is a nonlinear regression. You have to be slightly more careful. In any case, one can actually work out the asymptotic covariance of this. Okay, and it's a fairly complex expression. And one can actually show that, indeed, as you have more and more electrodes, your performance doesn't really improve very much. Typically, you'd expect if you have n electrodes, if everything was IID and you had no interaction between things, you'd get 1 over n improvement, right? Here, you don't. So that's something which turns out to be the case. Okay, so this is the actual system. We've tested this on. So to test this, there are several things you can do. You can actually run the real experimental system and compare it with our partial differential equation model. That's to kind of tune our model. That's the first step. And those are things we have done in great detail in the past. So that works. The second stage is, how can you actually show if the multi-compartment model is a good approximation? Because that's the way we want to estimate our concentrations. And it turns out, actually, they work extremely well, as we can see in these diagrams here. They actually approximate the PDE extremely well. The error magnitudes are typically between 6 to 8%, and even when we go to concentrations which are very, very low, concentrations of almost well below nanomolar scales. So these actually work quite well, and therefore it means that you can apply standard regression analysis to solve for these concentrations. I want to make a few other comments before I finish the talk. This is still work in progress. I mean, it's all very nice to come up with these approximations, but you know, there's certain things we haven't done which would not please people who are rigorous in mathematics. We haven't even shown that this system of equations has a unique solution. It's really damn hard to show that. So, I mean, if you think about PDEs, you embed this in a function space like a Sobolev space, you want to show the uniqueness of a solution, it's highly non-trivial. So, I mean, although the system works, you have a real-life system, showing uniqueness is really hard. It's something which we are working on at the moment. The other issues are, it would be really useful to come up with nice approximations for this PDE itself instead of just using a multi-compartment model, what we've done. Because we're still ending up with a bunch of ordinary differential equations which we don't have a closed-form solution. We're eventually doing it numerically. It would be much nicer if we can come up with further approximations which allow us to get some insight as to how the system works. So there are still a couple of drawbacks to our approach, but at least this is a start in the sense that given the complexity of the system, we can model it, it works pretty good, we can approximate it, and we can actually estimate using elementary nonlinear regression the sort of concentrations we want to estimate. So that's really all I want to say. If you're interested in any of this stuff, this was the original paper written by a colleague, and these are a couple of papers we did where we dealt with a single electrode case where we modeled it and actually did a nonlinear regression on that. Okay, thank you very much.
Is there a question there?
Oh, Vic, yes.
Okay, Vikram, so a really interesting problem. Of course, there's a whole lot of comments, I guess, for instance, with the PDE, you've got a linear spatial operator of the first two terms, so there's a Green's function that's known. You could generate Born approximations and stuff like that. Have you been looking in that direction?
We have quite a bit. What really kills us is, is this guy.
You see,
this is a horrible boundary condition. This is a horrible boundary condition which links to the PDE.
Right.
And this really is, this thing too. And this takes a derivative of, you know, the concentration respect to spatial axes and sets it to another thing.
So then one is thinking of boundary element methods, because that's the usual way to deal with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Numerically, what we've done actually is, because you have a weak solution, or obviously you don't have a strong solution, we use a finite element method which takes test functions automatically. But again, so far our approach is completely engineering in the sense that we have a solution, it works, but from a mathematical point of view, we still haven't even shown any structural properties.
Okay, but boundary element method is different from finite element.
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar with
it. Yes, I am.
Fine. So, but anyway, it seems to me that might be worth looking at. The other thing is, I'm not entirely clear about the regression analysis, because the U is a time-varying quantity. So I'm wondering, for instance, if you need to impose some regularization on the temporal paths of the U signals.
Okay, so let's again go through it. So A is the concentration which changes over time, of course. We're interested in A0, which is the initial concentration.
Right.
A is coupled to these chemical reactions which are U, which evolves over time. These are pretty easy to show, for example, that these are always non-negative and so on. They're just basic chemical reactions.
Okay.
The only difficulty in this is the non-linearity of it.
But you've got to reconstruct U of T, right?
Well, one specific component of that is what we measure in noise.
Okay, but when you do the regression, what are you estimating? Just A at zero?
A0, one parameter.
But U of T is in there and must be dealt with along the way somehow.
It is. So what you have is, when you replace this by a multi-compartment model, you have a bunch of ordinary differential equations here and here, which are in U, and we're interested in one specific component of U observed in noise. which is a concentration of the dimers, basically. Basically, the number of coupled guys here, because the current is proportional to those.
No, I can understand all that, but I guess, again, in the middle somewhere in that regression, you, as a function of t, must somehow be being recovered in order to estimate
One of the components. One component of u is a function.
So I'm just wondering whether you need some temporal regularization in order to do that. Or
We haven't applied any such thing so far.
That might help.
It might help, yeah, that's true.
All right.